We began chapter 48 last time we were together, and this was a, like we talked about in 47 where, I'm sorry, 46 where they had the judgment of God coming against Egypt, and now we're talking about Moab. So God is beginning to look at the Gentile nations and speaking of the judgment that they will now experience now that he's he has prophesied the judgment against his people in Israel and Judah. So we're going to be picking up in verse 11, and 11 says 48. Jeremiah 48:11 says, Moab hath been at ease from his youth, and he hath settled on his lees, and hath not been emptied from vessel to vessel, neither hath he gone into captivity. Therefore his taste remained in him, and his scent is not changed. Really, if you think about this, what the Lord is really saying is, from Moab's perspective, all things continue as they always have. But what the Lord is talking about here is he's saying, you know, since the inception of Moab, they've not had any real problem. Everything seems to have gone well for them. So they are a people that have considered themselves blessed, and they didn't have any need of God, Jehovah God, in their lives. But he talks about these things that he calls lees, being settled. And for those of you who may make wine, and, you know, if you make the wine in those big barrels and stuff begins to settle at the bottom, and the stuff that settles at the bottom we call dregs, but they're really... another term for that are these lees. They're really not good for much of anything. So God is kind of equating Moab to be the, you know, even though, you know, you get two perspectives. You have the Moabite people who think they're doing really well. They're prosperous and everything. They're very strong people, and they've not had any problems. And then you got God's perspective of them, where he says they're like the dregs at the bottom of the barrel, right? You know, it's a stark contrast, because what you're talking about is people who are in their sin and are enjoying their sin and don't see any reason to change. Then you have God's perspective, where he sees the sin and he just says, you know, it's like filthy rags, right? So it's not a pleasant analogy for the people. So when he talks about, you know, their vessels have never been emptied, it'd be like where you just make wine and put it in the barrel and you never really clean the barrel out, right? You just continue to put more wine into it, and it just keeps settling and settling and settling, and you end up with all this stuff at the bottom. They've never gone into captivity, so they've never had an enemy come in and conquer them. And therefore, you know, from their perspective, like I said, they feel like they're in a good place. Everything continues as it has always continued. They see no reason to have to change. Now, of course, we know Jeremiah is being tasked with going to them and talking to them. And just by way of understanding, when Jeremiah comes to them, this is before the fall of Judah, the complete destruction of Judah. So he's prophesying to these Gentile nations even before the full destruction of God's people. But the northern kingdom has already fallen, because they fell when the Assyrian Empire came in. So, you know, when you look at it this way, well, let's go on first, and then I'll speak about that. Verses 12 and 13 of this chapter. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will send unto him wanderers that shall cause him to wander, and shall empty his vessels and break their bottles, And Moab shall be ashamed of Chemosh, as the house of Israel was ashamed of Bethel, their confidence. So, again, you know, he's still using that analogy of the wine, but he's saying that their vessels are going to be emptied, the bottles are going to be broken. So the thing that they equate themselves of being so good at, because they don't see their sin, they just enjoy the what we would call the wine, you know, the thing that makes them happy. And we're not necessarily talking about, you know, the actual wine, but it's their sin. So they so much enjoy their sin that, you know, God's saying that he's going to bring in wanderers to cause them to wander. So he's going to bring in the Babylonians, obviously, that we've been speaking about. And the Babylonians, even though they had never been in captivity before, are going to overrun them. Many of their people are going to go into captivity. Many are going to die. So it's going to be similar to what happened to Judah. Now, he says, Moab shall be ashamed of Chemosh. Now, Chemosh is both a city and it's a place where he equates it to like Bethel in Israel. So it's you know, if you remember in the Northern Kingdom, they created a fake temple, false temple, and they put a golden calf in there, and the people came and worshiped there. And, you know, that was an abomination to God. So God says Chemosh is the same way. They have a major city where Chemosh is worshipped, and Chemosh is really Baal in other terminology that we see in Scripture. So they are in the same situation that the northern tribes were in. And why is that important? Because, you know, we say over and over again in Jeremiah, it's judgment, judgment, judgment. But God always gives a reason why the judgment is coming. So when Jeremiah goes into Moab, he lets them know, here's the reason why. And that's the purpose of this chapter. He begins to lay out all the things that Moab has done and why God is angry with them. And one of those things is the fact that they have these false gods that they worship. And remember, we talked about how Moab was a nation that was founded by a incestuous relationship between Lot's stepdaughters and Lot. So they theoretically should have been, they were people who knew the Lord, or at least knew of the Lord. I don't know if I'll say they knew the Lord, but, you know, they were part of, you know, Abraham and Lot, that group that separated, and Lot took the plains and the whole bit. So, but they were living right near Sodom, and it seems like they had a great influence on them. And, you know, God is saying, look, you know, you have knowledge of me, but that knowledge of me isn't translating into anything effectual. So you're doing things completely against what I have, what my law says. And that's one of the reasons why he's going to destroy this nation. And, you know, and we talked about how because Israel fell already to the Assyrians, you know, when God does things like this, like he says, many of the things that we have in scriptures are examples for us. When northern tribe of Israel fell, that was supposed to be an example to the southern tribe of Judah, but they didn't change. But even before Judah fell, the nations around Israel as a whole saw the judgment that came on God's chosen people in the northern tribes, and it should have been something that they took account of as well. But, you know, we know how that goes, right? I mean, we can look at things I don't want to get into a lot of crazy stuff, but, you know, we've had some crazy weather in this country. And if you go back and you look at it, and this is just me speaking, the moment that Biden said that he's going to withhold aid to Israel, all these terrible things started happening, right? And I look at it and I say, that's God chastising the United States because they turned their back on his people. And that's what's happened here in Moab as well. And we're going to see that. And, you know, you have to be careful when you say stuff like that, because then people think you're crazy, you're just a conspiracy person and whatever. But, you know, you can't discount it either. You have to look at it and say, you know, even if it's not judgment from God, it's at least a way for God to say, I want your attention. And, you know, he's got my attention. I don't know about everybody else, but, you know, I see it. All right. So as we continue, verses 14 to 17, it says, how say ye, we are mighty and strong men for the war? Moab is spoiled and gone up out of her cities, and his chosen young men are gone down to the slaughter, saith the king, whose name is the Lord of hosts. The calamity of Moab is near to come, and his affliction hasteth fast. All ye that are about him bemoan him, and all ye that know his name say, how is the strong staff broken and the beautiful rod? And again, this is one of those things where, you know, people have put their faith and trust in man. And, you know, so much of this is paralleling Judah, as we read about God's judgment that was coming on Judah, where they were prideful. They thought that they had well-fortified cities. They thought that they had a very strong army. And, you know, in Judah's case, they didn't believe that God would allow Gentiles to come in and destroy the city where his temple was. But, you know, you have to look at things and say, you know, if God can do that to his chosen people, what makes you think he's not going to do that to the Gentiles, right? So he says that, you know, their mighty men and strong are going to be spoiled, and their chosen men are going to chosen young men are going to go down to the slaughter. And who says it? It's the king, whose name is the Lord of hosts. So there's no doubt. Who's in control? You know, even though it's Nebuchadnezzar who's going to come in and invade their land, God is making it clear that judgment is coming upon you, but it is my will that I have risen up the Babylonian Empire to come in and conquer you. It's I love God's word from the standpoint that he clarifies so many things. And when prophecies are happening, you know, I remember being young and we heard about prophecies of Nostradamus and many of these people that are fortune tellers and things like that, and they somehow surface at the end of the year. What's the new year going to be like, right? And then they talk about, oh, yeah, we're going to have some devastating hurricanes. Well, you know, doesn't take a genius to figure that out, right? I mean, we have them every year. Well, how about you be specific like God, where you start to name cities that are going to be impacted by it, you know? God is very specific about what's going to happen. And, you know, when you read his word and you see these things and then they come to pass specifically as God said, then, you know, where's your confidence lie, you know? So in this situation, he's talking about how the strength of Moab, which is, you know, their men of war, their young men, is going to be broken. And, you know, their staff, which is, you know, their that strength, right? The staff typically talks about the ruling party, right? The king holds his scepter, right? It's a staff. And he's saying that's going to be broken as well. So it's really a culmination of a lot of things that God says are going to come upon them. And he starts to get specific. So when we get into verses 18 to 25, he says, "Thou daughter that dost inhabit Dibon, come down from thy glory and sit in thirst, for the spoiler of Moab shall come upon thee, and he shall destroy thy strongholds." Now, you know, we talked in the past, when you're a proud people and you think, "I have a fortified city," and God's talking about this city called Dibon, or Dibon, however it's pronounced, he's calling them, using the symbolism of them being a daughter. Now, daughters are not your military people normally, right? When you think of a daughter, you think of someone who the father protects, right? She's being, I don't want to get into a lot of trouble with, you know, people that might hear this on the internet, but, you know, we're talking about a day and age here where the women were not the ones who went out to war. I know we have women in our military now, but these were women who were primarily, I don't want to say at home, but they were, their purpose was to have the children, prepare the food, do the shopping and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and I don't say that like, hey, God's really traditional in his viewpoint. That's a traditional viewpoint of many people, but, you know, men can go shopping, men can handle things around the house, men cook, all that kind of stuff. So, but, you know, when you think of people going to war, you don't think of you sending your daughters off to war. So God is equating their strength and their fortitude to being as if their military men were their daughters going out to fight. So it's like you're offering up your young men, and God is using the symbolism of a daughter. They're going out like they're being sacrificed, right? So he's going to destroy their strongholds. "O inhabitant of Aroer, stand by the way and espy. Ask him that fleeth and her that escapeth and say, what is done? Moab is confounded, for it is broken down. Howl and cry. Tell ye it in Arnon that Moab is spoiled. The judgment is come upon the plain country, upon Holon, and upon Jahaza, and upon Mepheth, and upon Dibon, and upon Nebo, and upon Beth Diblathaim, and upon Kiriathaim, and upon Beth Gamol, and upon Beth Meon, and upon Kerioth, and upon Basra, and upon all the cities of the land of Moab, far or near. The horn of Moab is cut off, and his arm is broken, saith the Lord." So when you talk about the staff, when you talk about the scepter, when you talk about the arm, the horn being broken, you're talking about that which is in authority, that which is the power. So we talk about the horn in the book of Revelations and book of Daniel as being equivalent to kings and kingdoms. So he's saying it's going to be broken, right? Now he names all kinds of cities. And if you remember that we handed out some maps last time we were together, and when you look at these cities that are listed, I know not all of them are on the map, but they're all over the place. Some are in the north, some are in the central part, some are on the south, on the east, on the west. So what God is doing is he's saying all of these cities are going to fall. And, you know, when you consider, it's not like we have to put ourselves back in that day. When the military comes in on their horses, their chariots, their foot soldiers, it's not like they just come in and they sweep across the country and, you know, they destroy their enemy in days. It's different. It's like our modern technology. You know, we can sit, you know, 50 miles away and launch missiles into someplace. But it's not that way. These are hand-to-hand combat kind of deals. So these people, move from city to city to city, conquering those cities. Now, when Jeremiah says, hey, this city's going to fall, this city's going to fall, this city's going to fall. Now, you know, you may not believe him, but when Babylon comes in and they begin to conquer some of these northern cities and then continue down into the central part of the nation, you know, when you're in the lower part of the nation and you see, oh, that one fell, that one fell, that one fell, then you begin to fear, right? Because you know it's coming your way. The things that Jeremiah said are coming to pass. And these cities are falling, just like he said. So, you know, it's an important thing to understand. And he tells them that, you know, even if he didn't list every city, town, village that was in Moab, God says in verse 24, and upon all the cities of the land of Moab, far or near. So, you know, there's not going to be any exceptions, is basically what God is saying. It's going to be a complete invasion, and all are going to be impacted by it. So, it's something that I think, you know, when you know of the time frame that you're dealing with, when a certain city is attacked, they send messengers out to other cities and they say, hey, we're under attack. Then other cities theoretically have the ability to either mount an offensive against the enemy or at least prepare so that if they get attacked, they can say we're ready for the fight. But as they start to fall like dominoes, then people begin to say, hey, we're not able to stop this thing and it's just going to roll over us. And that's the gist. When God says these things, it's to make a point. So the people may not have believed in God at the time, but as things continue to progress, you can't help but believe that he's the one who said this was going to happen and is now orchestrating it. Verses 26 and 27. He says, make ye him drunken, for he magnified himself against the Lord. And that's important, we understand. He magnified himself against the Lord. Well, who else magnified himself against the Lord? That's right, Lucifer. So, you know, when you look at these things and you see, basically what they're saying is, we don't need you, God, God of the Jews. We have our own God, and we're doing just fine without you. And God says, okay, well, here I come. So he says he's going to make him drunk. And then he says, Moab also shall wallow in his vomit, and he also shall be in derision. For was not Israel a derision unto thee? Was he found among thieves? For since thou spakest of him, thou skippest for joy. Now, he's speaking of a couple of things here, but this is why, you know, I mean, they're putting down Jehovah God. They don't need him. They don't want him. And they think they're better than him, or they at least think their gods are better than him. And he says, remember when my people were in derision? So when they were in straits, when they were being attacked, he says, you skipped for joy. You were happy that they were being invaded. Well, you know, that's like another reason why God says, you know, the judgment is coming upon you. So he equates them to be people that are going to be drunk, but what they're going to be drunk is not with wine, but they're going to be drunk with the wrath of God. So when God passes judgment upon them, they're going to be sickened to the point where they are literally sick. And he says that they end up wallowing in their own vomit. So it's it's kind of gross and disgusting to think about. But, you know, that's kind of the gist. Like when you If you drank to excess, your body says, hey, this isn't good. And your body says, we got to get rid of this stuff. And, you know, how many people have talked about hugging the porcelain god, right? Because they have to throw up, right? So, you know, it's the same kind of deal, right? They think that they don't need Jehovah God, but when his wrath comes upon them, they're going to be filled to the brim with the wrath of God to the point where they are sickened. And, you know, it's a hard thing to read about. And that's kind of the point. So as we continue, when he gets to verse 28, he says, O ye that dwell in Moab, leave the cities and dwell in the rock, and be like the dove that maketh her nest in the sides of the hole's mouth. Now, you know, again, so much of what Jeremiah talks about seems to always point forward to like the time of the coming of the kingdom of God, the millennial kingdom, as well as into the book of Revelation, where it's dealing with the coming tribulation. And, you know, when God's judgment falls upon men, what does it say? The men try to hide themselves in the caves and have the rocks fall upon them so that they can get away. And a lot of that, if I'm not mistaken, was when the locusts that are like men with the body of horses and tails of a scorpion come out and start stinging people, and but their sting won't allow people to die. They can just be in pain. So, you know, they hide themselves in the caves. And that's what God's saying here. Oh, you people of Moab, as you flee from your cities, knowing that the judgment is coming, you can go and hide in a rock or be like a dove that hides in the hole on the side of a mountain. But guess what? It's not going to matter. It's not going to help you. Now, it's important that we understand that, you know, we talked about him equating her to being a daughter. We talked about him equating her to being drunken with wine. And now he's equating her to be like a dove. Well, have you ever seen a dove come and attack? Doves don't attack. Doves, they're what I guess we would term them as peaceful, but they don't have claws and the kind of a beak that would tear flesh. So they're generally a bird that eats seeds and berries. So God is saying, you have no strength. You're a dove. You're harmless. And then as he continues on, in verse 29, that's important because we're going to see that analogy be destroyed. But in verse 29, he says, we have heard the pride of Moab. He is exceeding proud. His loftiness and his arrogancy and his pride and the haughtiness of his heart. I know his wrath, saith the Lord, but it shall not be so. His lies shall not so affect it. Well, this is the same kind of deal. You know, we can go into our defensed cities and the rulers there are like, yeah, you'll be perfectly safe here, right? It's the same thing as Judah, right? We're not going to be in any trouble. This is going to be a passing thing. They're going to give up and they're going to go away. Everything will be fine, right? But that's what God is calling their lies. Their lies are not going to have any effect. So he says, you know, I know his wrath. So the people are a wrathful people. They are the type of people who will fight, but it's not going to have any effect. God says, you know, your judgment, like, okay, your judgment is because you are worshiping other gods. Your judgment is because you have turned against my people and have laughed at them when they were also being invaded. Your judgment is also now because of your great pride and arrogancy. So pride and arrogancy are hated by God. And again, you know, we know the one who is so prideful to think that he was better than God, right? And, you know, those are the things that God is laying out for them. And then as we get into verses 31 to 34, he says, "Therefore will I howl for Moab, and I will cry out for all Moab. Mine heart shall mourn for the men of Kir Hires. O vine of Sibmah, I will weep for thee with the weeping of Jazer. Thy plants are gone over the sea. They reach even to the sea of Jazer. The spoiler is fallen upon thy summer fruits and upon thy vintage, and joy and gladness is taken from the plentiful field and from the land of Moab. And I have caused wine to fail from the wine presses. None shall tread with shouting. Their shouting shall be no shouting. From the cry of Heshbon even unto Elealeh and even unto Jahaz have thy uttered their voice. From Zoar even unto Horonaim as an heifer of 3 years old. For the waters also of Nimrim shall be desolate." Now there's a lot going on here. But again, he's naming a bunch of cities. And he's saying that what's happening, this land that was fruitful, these people that were prosperous, they had everything that they needed, they were rich in material goods. And he says, when the enemy comes upon you, all of those things are going to just become spoils of war. They're going to take them away from you. They're going to destroy them. So your harvest is going to be taken away. All the things that, you know, your wine presses won't be pressing any wine. So the summer fruits are going to be removed. All the time that they would normally be celebrating, hey, it's the summer harvest, is now going to be turned into a time of mourning. And this is Jeremiah who is feeling this overwhelming sense of sorrow for them. Now, Jeremiah does this a lot. He did that for Judah when God talked to him about the judgment that was going to come against Judah, and he began to weep for the people. And, you know, the same thing is happening here. Well, why would Jeremiah weep for the Moabites? Well, he's weeping for them because they are people just like us, right? When we look at people that are out there, you know, they're not Christians. Well, do we not weep for them knowing that they're going to hell if they don't make the right decision? So, you know, it's the same thing with Jeremiah. He's being told destruction is coming upon them. There's going to be, the sword entering into their land. And, you know, we look at, you know, our country and the people about us, and, you know, we may not have a sword come in, but judgment of some kind is going to come upon this land at some time, because we know it's coming upon the whole world. So, you know, do we not feel for the people that are out there that, you know, if God told us all of Lancaster, all of Cheektowaga, all of West Seneca, and Elma and Hamburg, where Orchard Park, I don't know, your Hamburg, right? Okay. So, you know, if you Lackawanna, I know. Okay. So if we hear that, you know, everything that you have, your homes, your the treasures that you have in your house, your kids, all these things are going to be destroyed and taken over by an enemy, would you not be sad to know that, you know, you could have protected your families and protected the people in your neighborhood? And, you know, it's the same thing with Jeremiah. When he goes into these places and he speaks to them about this judgment, it's overwhelming for him. He's literally seeing what's going to happen. I guess it's really hard to draw some kind of a equivalency here, but if you If you went someplace so beautiful that you were like, oh, this is like heaven on earth, whatever that place might be. For everybody, it's a little different. But, you know, at some point in your life, if you went there and you said, oh, I really love that place, I love to go there, I'll go back there again someday. If you hear that that place is going to be completely destroyed so that there's nothing going to be left standing, it touches you in a way, right? And that's what is happening to Jeremiah. Jeremiah's walking into these towns and he's seeing what's happening. People are merry, they're getting married, they're having feasts, and the children are playing and everything is wonderful in their minds, but Jeremiah knows it's all going to go to naught. And one day it's going to be all done. And you can't walk into a town or a village like that and not be affected by that, right? So he begins to weep. And that's just because he's human. I mean, we are, right? So, all right. Then verses 35 to 39. He says, moreover, I will cause to cease in Moab, saith the Lord, him that offereth in the high places, and him that burneth incense to his gods. Therefore mine heart shall sound for Moab like pipes, and mine heart shall sound like pipes for the men of Kirhiraz, because the riches that he hath gotten are perished. For every head shall be bald, and every beard clipped. Upon all the hands shall be cuttings, and upon the loins sackcloth. There shall be lamentation generally upon all the housetops of Moab and in the streets thereof. For I have broken Moab like a vessel wherein is no pleasure, saith the Lord. They shall howl, saying, how is it broken down? How hath Moab turned the back with shame? So shall Moab be a derision and a dismaying to all them about him. So he starts off by saying he's going to destroy their high places, the places where they go and offer their incense, their sacrifices, their worship to these false gods. And he's going to destroy those that are the ones who do the offering. So if they have a false priesthood or whatever, the people that are responsible for it. And then the people are going to be mourning. So he says, you know, they're going to shave their heads. They're going to be bald. They're going to clip their beards. They're going to cut themselves. They're going to wear sackcloth. That's very common in Old Testament scripture when you're in mourning, that you do that where you're in mourning or in have some kind of humiliation brought upon yourself. And he says, this is going to be nationwide. It's going to be across all of Moab. The people will be in lamentation. So they're going to all be weeping. They won't have any pleasure. There's going to be what normally would be howling in the street that would be, joyful cheering in the street is now going to just be quiet howling, and the people that were supposed to be the ones who protected them are going to turn their back in shame. Now, you know, it's not a very pretty picture. And again, we see the same parallels as with Judah when the Lord talks to them. And remember, this is before the final destruction of Judah. So, you know, the same things that God is saying are going to happen to the Gentile nations are the things that God says are going to happen to his own people. And, you know, what does that tell you? That God's not a respecter of persons. So, you know, the things that happen to his chosen people would be because they were the ones who should have known better. But now that God is coming into these Gentile nations and explaining to them the same thing, everybody pretty much is under the same judgment of God. So it's, I don't know a better way to describe that other than, you know, he's no respecter of persons. They're all going to face the same thing because it's all coming down from Babylon. If it was a different enemy, maybe, you know, it'd be a little different. But, you know, the things that are successful in war are the things that you keep doing until they're not successful anymore. Yep. And then verses 40 to 42. For thus saith the Lord, behold, he shall fly as an eagle, he being, you know, Nebuchadnezzar and his army, and shall spread his wings over Moab. Kerioth is taken, and the strongholds are surprised, and the mighty men's hearts in Moab at that day shall be as the heart of a woman in her pangs. And Moab shall be destroyed from being a people, because he hath magnified himself against the Lord. Now, you know, again, when we talked about Moab, and he described them as a dove, and now we have Nebuchadnezzar being described as an eagle. Well, doves have no way to defend themselves against an eagle. Eagles have talons. Eagles have beaks that are made to tear flesh. They're meat-eating animals, birds. And, you know, it's that deal where he's like saying that, you know, the when that happens, when Nebuchadnezzar's army comes into Moab, the men's hearts are going to be like a woman who is in her pangs. And this is obviously talking about birth pains. And, you know, it's not, the perfect analogy, right? Because, you know, when you go into labor, you women who have had children, I've been present, but I obviously am not the one experiencing it. And I say that clearly, so I don't know what it's like. But I know it's not pleasant, because I've seen that. But, you know, you go into labor and, you know, you get these contractions. And they're like, you know, 30 minutes apart, then they're 20 minutes apart, then they're 15 minutes apart, and then they're 5 minutes apart. And, you know, I know, you know, at first you think, okay, it's bad, it hurts, but then it subsides and you say, oh, I have rest. But then it comes again, and then when it comes again, it's stronger. And then, you know, they start coming closer, and then you're not getting that break. And then, you know, eventually it's just pain, 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 right? And I'm not trying to dissuade anybody from having children. But, you know, it becomes a problem like that. And in their case, it's not like he says, oh, your mighty men are like women who are having birth pains until they conceive. No, they don't conceive. In this case, they're just having the birth pains. So the pains just continue until it's done, right? So the people are not going to get a reprieve. So it's a great example. If you want to say that, but it wouldn't be the situation that any of us would want to be in. he says that Moab is going to be destroyed from being a people. And because they've magnified themselves against the Lord. So is there a place on earth right now called Moab?
Oh, no.
No. No. Yep. See, what happens is, there are places like Moab. But what happens is Moab does, some of the people, those that are not killed, do end up going into captivity. And some of those people actually do come out of captivity when the... when the 70 years are over and, Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom is, yes, the Persians, yeah, Medo-Persians, yes. I was getting caught up with the Syro-Phoenicians. And I'm like, no, that's not right. But, you know, yep, the Medo-Persians. And, you know, when the people that wanted to go back to Jerusalem go back, some of the Moabite people also return. But they never return in a situation where they can establish themselves as having a nation again. So Moab, that's a tough one. I would believe it's part of Saudi Arabia, maybe. It's in that general area. I don't know if I have, a map that tells me that. Yeah, I don't have a current outline, so I don't know. We'll find out for you. Good question. Geography was not my strong suit. Yeah. I know Lebanon and Turkey are to the north, and Jordan? Okay. All right. Then verses 43 to 44, it says, fear and the pit and the snare shall be upon thee, O inhabitant of Moab, saith the Lord. He that fleeth from fear shall fall into the pit, and he that getteth up out of the pit shall be taken in the snare. For I will bring upon it, even upon Moab, the year of their visitation, saith the Lord. So, you know, he already said that that this invasion was going to come quickly. In prior verses. Now he's saying, you know, you're going to have different trials. Things are going to come up that are going to be hurdles that are going to need to be overcome. But in each hurdle that you overcome, the trial is going to get worse and worse and worse. So you're going to fall into a pit, but when you get out of the pit, you're going to get caught in a snare. So there's going to be something that's laid up for you after each and every one of those things. So you can't escape, right? It's just the way it is. So the year of your visitation is coming upon you. So, you know, he's making it clear. This is going to come soon. So it's not like, hey, you know, we say, oh, well, you know, the Lord could return today. He could return in 100 years. He could return in 1,000 years. I don't believe it's going to be that long, but, you know, we don't know. But, you know, when Jeremiah comes in and starts to tell these people this, it's not like, hey, this could be 50 years out. This is going to be soon. All right, verse 45. They that fled stood under the shadow of Heshbon, because of the force, but a fire shall come forth out of Heshbon, and a flame from the midst of Sion, and shall devour the corner of Moab, and the crown of the head of the tumultuous ones. Now, if I remember correctly, I believe Heshbon and Sion were in the northern part of Moab. Heshbon definitely is in the northern part. I'm trying to find Sion, but I'm not having a whole lot of luck. But, you know, the gist is that Heshbon is going to fall. And when it falls, he's equating that to a fire that's going to then go out from Heshbon. So it's like a forest fire. It's going to start here, and then it's going to quickly spread, and it's going to go out, so that it will also consume Sion, and it will ultimately, you know, spread throughout the entire land, destroying the entire land. So I know I read some places where it said that part of Nebuchadnezzar's invasion was that he burned down all the temples, the houses, and things. And we saw that in Judah, where he completely destroyed all the structures for the kings, the princes, and all that kind of stuff, and the high places and stuff like that. And, you know, that's quite possible that he did the same thing here in Moab. And then verses 46 and 47 say, "Woe be unto thee, O Moab, the people of Chemosh perisheth." And remember, Chemosh was the city where their god was placed. It's their place of worship, I guess. They're like Jerusalem would have been the city of worship in Judah. "For thy sons are taken captive and thy daughters captives. Yet will I bring again the captivity of Moab in the latter days, saith the Lord. Thus far is the judgment of Moab." So, again, you know, he reiterates that Chemosh is going to fall. The place where you go to see your false god is going to be destroyed, and the people of it are going to go into captivity. And then, you know, when he talks about bringing the captivity of Moab in the latter days, I was trying to find a good explanation for that, because, you know, we see that the Moabites come back when many of the Israelites return from Babylonian captivity. But, you know, it gives the impression that they're going to be captive again. And the only way that that seems to make sense is that since they're not a nation anymore, they're going to be a people. They're going to be a Gentile people. And it's got to be looking forward again to when the Gentile nations are coming before the Lord for judgment. And, you know, that's all I can come up with based on that. But I'm not... if someone sees something better in there, I'd be more than happy to hear it. But I couldn't find a good response for that. But, you know, he says that thus far is the judgment of Moab. So that's the end of God's prophecy of judgment for Moab. And then, you know, the next time we come together, he's going to continue with other Gentile nations in the area of Israel. But again, that won't be next week, because we're not having a study next week. So,